The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Tuesday, thanks for being with us. Mitch Albom. I always love having Mitch Albom on the show through the years. Mitch Albom, of course, a millions and millions of books. And of course, he's a columnist with the Detroit Free Press. The Lions, who stink, are coming here this Sunday to play the Cardinals. The Cardinals should be 3-0 after this Sunday. And I want to talk to Mitch. You know, is he working on any projects with books? And I want to talk to him about why is it the Lions are struggling again and what type of team is coming here on Sunday. But also want to visit with him about Michigan football and the Big Ten and their whole start again, stop again. Hey, we have to have students on campus in order to play. And that, well, wait a minute. Well, actually, we don't have to have students on campus. So Mitch Albom will be with us on the Lions and Cardinals. Very much looking forward to that. Michael Fabiano with Sandy Charles. Sandy and Michael, the fantasy football focus. With all the injuries in the NFL, the fantasy football platform on Sports 360 does a lot. A lot of people are into fantasy football. We get it. But, man, this weekend it was just like injuries all over the place. Actually, I heard Susie Kalber last night. I like Susie a lot. But she said something that really angered me. She said, this proves why we have to have preseason. And I wanted to throw the remote at them. Like, no, you're not on the payroll. Please, please. You're defending? So we'll have Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer with SiriusXM and CBS Sports. He will be with Sandy Charles. That comes up here shortly. Opening comments brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. I've been telling you about Desert Financial Credit Union since July. Jeff Mishi said, hey, let's figure something out. And Jeff, of course, is over the top of Desert Financial Credit Union. And I said that would be awesome and amazing because I go to Desert Financial Credit Union. When I walk in, yeah, I'm masked up. They're masked up. I take care of transactions on the personal side and on the business side. You go to their website, there's plenty there for you to look at if it's your small business, if it's being part of the community. That's what I like about Desert Financial Credit Union. They are community, first and foremost. There's many locations. You can go through the drive-thru as well. That's Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their support. Sports360AZ.com. Here now is Eric Sorensen, Senior Executive Vice President of Nothing, Everything. Did you watch the Raiders last night?
I did. I watched most of the game. It was
pathetic. It was pathetic.
Why was it pathetic?
This is fantasy football related. So,
of course.
You don't want to hear about my fantasy team.
I mean, usually the Raiders are pathetic, but this year it appears the Raiders are not pathetic. The AFC West and the NFC West are two really, really good divisions.
I ran into Steve Keim yesterday at something, and we were talking about penalties. He's not happy. He's not happy. And he shouldn't be happy because the number of penalties through two games is, it's just unacceptable. And then when I said, you know, you're going to be 5-0, he really didn't like that. He just did not like that.
They are going to be 5-0.
They are going to be 5-0, right? Like, is Teddy the only one is Carolina. That if Teddy Bridgewater, with no Christian McCaffrey now that he's hurt, and Sandy's going to get into that with Fabs later on in the show, you've got to win at Carolina. Is it just flying back there? No. There's going to be nobody in the stadium. So, I mean, really, how hard is that going to be? And if you lose to the Lions, like Mitch Albom for years and years and years is the columnist for the Detroit Free Press. Eric, he's seen so many bad football teams. And like when they made their hire of their current head coach, it's Bill Belichick. You know, he's got, I don't have a pencil, but he's Matt Patricia. You know, he's got the pencil on his, he looks so cool there, you know? Like, oh no. He hasn't done anything.
It hasn't worked.
No, hasn't worked. Did you by chance see today's AZ Central column by Nick Pecoro taking apart the Diamondbacks season piece by piece and trying to make sense of it? Did you by chance see that?
I have not seen it yet.
You have not seen that yet.
But I do notice on the crawl every night, the Diamondbacks are losing a lot more than they're winning. And we are once again in extended spring training, like we've seen, not in the recent past, but, you know, before Torrey arrived, it was like they're just playing out the string. And this year, they're just playing out the string.
There was a line in there about possibly seeing a turnaround next season. I mean, seriously, you're expecting the Padres just all of a sudden forget and go in the dumper? You're expecting Tatis to be over the hill and washed up and Manny Machado to be over the hill and washed up and all these pitchers that they have, they can't figure it out anymore? Like, they're in a hole. They are in a hole.
And the Giants seem to be on the right track. And then you have the Dodgers. So...
yeah, but are you going to watch postseason? Like, I like having baseball on in postseason. I like postseason baseball. But seriously, with the sports calendar doing what it's doing now, like last night, I had the Lightning on for a bit because it's the Stanley Cup in September. Never had that before. And tonight, I've got the Lakers trying to go up 3, and I've got the Diamondbacks on. So that one's pretty simple. That one's pretty easy. But I still need to pay attention a little bit. Unless you just want me a senior executive vice president of nothing for all these years, if you don't want me to talk about them at all.
No, it's fine.
Yeah.
It is your show, so.
Yeah, but you're the one that could tell me what to do. There's a story I want to get to with Bryson DeChambeau that Mark Ziegler in the San Diego Union wrote today, and we'll do that after Mitch Albom. I know you're getting into golf. Are you getting better? We played like 3 weeks
no.
ago.
Are you
in the 90s, 80s?
No.
100s still?
Yeah, probably in the hundreds. I need a lesson.
I took a lesson. I'm all screwed up right now. I took a lesson 2 weeks ago, and it's not his fault. My wife, who had knee surgery last week, she's going crazy. So I said, let's go out, get in a cart, put your leg up, I'll play. I take her out, and I'm trying to work on everything he's teaching, L to L, L to L, this to this. I'm trying to do all of that. Eric, I was topping the ball. Like, I haven't topped the ball in 10 years. And she's, by the second hole, she just looked at me and she said, yeah, we're not keeping score today.
You should just go back to the way you were playing.
I know, because...
when you and I played a couple weeks ago, you hit the ball great, so...
I know, I'm jacked up right now. I mean, I'm awful. And I thought about throwing a club, but I'm asking you on the golf end because... Mark Ziegler does a good job of the San Diego Union, wrote that Bryson DeChambeau, the headline is, bulked up Bryson win may cause PED issues. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty strong. And it's all about Bryson taking the game. And I'll get into it at 10:35. But DeChambeau, one of his quotes is, it's tough to rein in athleticism. And I was hitting it like just a normal average tour player a year ago. And then all of a sudden got a lot stronger, worked out every day, been working out every day. And all of a sudden, not just because of clubs, but because of me, I'm able to gain 20 to 25 yards. Now, he's not lacking in confidence. I got that. And there's some people that don't like Bryson. But there's a side of this with performance-enhancing drugs in high school and college golfers I want to get to. Again, after Mitch Albom. So.
And I mean, Bryson is drinking like 7 protein shakes a day.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's not, I don't know, like if you're going to cast that net, you better make sure that you catch some sort of fish, because pointing the PED finger is a slippery slope, especially if this guy, we see it in high school football, Brad, some of these kids, they had nothing to do. They had weights in their garage and they were working out 5 hours a day. And what do you know? They gained 20 pounds of muscle. It's not hard. I mean, you don't have to inject steroids to put on mass. If all you're doing is eating really healthy, eating a lot and working out, it's going to happen.
But a lot of people don't know that.
Right.
They just look at him and say, man, what is going on there? I want to get as jacked up as him. And there were some comments. I noticed it from Roger Maltby, who's got to be mid-60s with NBC, and he was the on-course reporter Sunday in the final round. And I'm back and forth between the Lions and the Open. And he actually said, I'm paraphrasing, I'm not sure I like this, but this is the way that it is. Meaning, a dude steps up, hits it 360, wedges it in and then putts. And he's doing that on every hole. Like every other club in his bag, what's the point? So I'm going to talk about that at 10:35, and then Sandy will have Fabiano with Fantasy Football. But up next, it is the award-winning author Mitch Albom from Detroit on the lines of Sports Reporters. We all watch the Sports Reporters. He still has that going with Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan. We'll have Mitch Albom. That's next. So now let's flip the script for the Cardinals. They're 2-0, and they meet the 0-2 Lions coming in this Sunday. We are happy to have Mitch Albom back with us, best-selling author, also with the Detroit Free Press. We had Mitch on a couple of years ago. We were talking off-air. The next person you meet in heaven, his last work, unless there's something you need to update us on the book front.
Actually, yeah, I've had another book out since then called Finding Chica. It's a true story. Of an orphanage I operate down in Haiti, and one of the little girls who we adopted from there and who had a brain tumor, and, you know, the battle that we fought with her. So, yes, there's been a book since then, but this is a sports program, so you probably don't want to be talking about that particular one. We can talk about Lions-Cardinals.
On the Lions-Cardinals front, Mitch, where are you at in Detroit with Matt Patricia? It looks from a distance like, what are we doing here exactly? Another rough start. You led at Green Bay on Sunday, but 0-2 coming to Arizona.
Yeah, it's been very disappointing. And you can sense in Detroit that patience has basically run out. There was some question as to whether Matt Patricia should be brought back for another year, and basically the owner, the new owner, the daughter of the former owner, decided one more year for the two of them, Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn, the GM. But she basically said, you know, we expect playoffs. Right now, they don't look like a team that's going to make the playoffs. And what's really most disturbing is that Matt Patricia came in as a reputation for a defensive specialist with the New England Patriots, and their defense is just awful. If you saw the game on Sunday, where they played against Green Bay. Now, granted, it's Green Bay, but, you know, they gave up 42 points. And they had been ahead and then gave up 31 straight points. The previous week, they had been ahead and gave up, I think, 17 points or whatever. You just can't do that and win in the NFL. And Lord knows what they're going to do against Arizona, because your team is looking pretty good right now.
What's gone wrong with the Lions? I know that's a really open-ended question, and we may not have enough time in this segment. We've got about 8 minutes if you want to fill all eight. But, I mean, really, what is going on in Detroit?
Well, you know, it's never one thing. Brad, it's never one thing. You know, you get injuries. Like last year, Matthew Stafford was injured and missed, you know, most of the rest of the season. You're not going to win if he's not your quarterback. So everything that happened last year, you could toss off to that. They're not deep. And, you know, they can look good at times. I mean, if you watch like the first 10 minutes of them against Green Bay, you thought this team's better than Green Bay. Mm-hmm. But they don't carry it through a whole game. They have bad game management. So you'll see they start out strong. They start out with some good tendencies, but the other team figures them out. And then they don't seem to have a backup plan when the other team figures you out. I always say that their halftimes are the worst halftimes of anybody in the NFL, because they're not doing anything. They just come out and basically do the same thing while the other team makes an adjustment. And so they tend to lose in the fourth quarters. And a lot of that's coaching, and a lot of it is depth, because, you know, guys get injured, aren't having a great game. You need somebody to come in and back them up who's just as good. And there's a big drop off between the top guys the Lions have at their positions and the guys who back them up. So it's not a deep team. It's not a particularly well-coached team, certainly not at the moment. They've got a few star players. Matthew Stafford's a really good quarterback. And, you know, they've got Adrian Peterson now and Kerryon Johnson as running backs. They have a really good receiver who hasn't played yet this season named Kenny Galladay. But, again, hasn't played. You know, injuries they had. They came out the first week and lost two guys at the same position. And you know, suddenly they didn't have a cornerback. So things happen to the Lions around here, and there's an expression in Detroit called SOL, same old Lions, and that's what everybody tweets after one of the games, and it's not fun.
Mitch Albom with us, best-selling author, Detroit Free Press columnist. On Matthew Stafford, Mitch, he's done a lot, been through a lot, off the field as well as on it, has a big contract. What's the future for him in Detroit? Does there get a point where, okay, this just didn't work and we need to move on?
Well, I mean, that's always a possibility when you don't win. You know, and it often happens that when you don't win and you get a high draft pick, suddenly you have the option of maybe picking another young quarterback that you want to hitch your wagon to. And there was some talk about Tua for the Detroit Lions last year because they had the third pick in the draft. They ended up passing on it. They took a cornerback named Jeff Okuda from Ohio State, who just looked terrible in his debut yesterday. And, of course, now everybody here is going, they should have taken Tua. But, yeah, that's the way people are. Yeah. It's not Matthew Stafford's fault, I'll tell you that. He's done nothing but be great and solid for this team for 10 years. And what I'm more surprised at is that Matthew Stafford hasn't talked about getting out of here and say, you know, I've only got one football career. I want to try to play for a winner at some point. He's not done that. He said, Detroit's where I was drafted. Detroit's where I want to be. I want to win with this team. So it won't be him who'll be saying, I need to get out of here. But you don't know if you get new management. You know, that's always an easy fix. So we'll start with a different young quarterback. But I got to tell you, it's not his fault. He's a fine quarterback. And you look at his statistics over the years, and with the exception of last year, he's also a pretty durable quarterback. So they got a lot of problems that – rank higher than Matthew Stafford in the quarterback position.
Yeah, but to your point, I guess, because the Lions are sitting here at 0-2, the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes, they would have to be one of those teams, along with the Jets, that would be mentioned, at least for now. Winning is a cure-all for that.
Yeah, before I get you out of here, it's only the second week of the season there.
Right. I know. I don't want to bury him. Before I get you out of here, the Big Ten. So we're sitting out here in Pac-12 country, and in Arizona, we're opening up, but we are looking at the Big Ten saying, okay, you guys are moving forward. Give us a feel about what the Big Ten stoppage restart has felt like, looked like for all those Michigan fans out here.
Well, I think the sense is that the Big Ten, when they announced that they were not going to play, felt like they were being leaders. And they were pretty sure that every other conference that week was also going to announce that it wasn't going to play. And very quickly, the Pac-12 did do that. But then, surprise, surprise, the SEC and the Big 12 and the ACC said, well, you guys cannot play, but we're going to play. And, you know, now we can play and we don't have to worry about Ohio State being in the running. And so that was the first kind of clunk over the head with a shovel for the Big 10. Like, wait a minute, we're not the leaders. They're going to play. Then as it got closer to it and you started seeing Clemson out there playing, and even worse for Michigan people, Notre Dame, which is right down the road, and they're playing. Then this whole sense of like, well, wait a minute, they're playing and we're just going to sit here and they're just going to, you know, have a season where they can compete for a national championship and we're not going to participate. And you could feel the rumbling kind of growing certainly amongst the coaches, amongst some of the players and their families, and just amongst the general fan base. Now, I personally think they did the right thing by canceling. And I don't think they should be playing because these are not professionals and they're not paid. And they have to live on college campuses, which right now are the biggest hotbed of COVID-19 in the country. So you're basically saying you have to go and live in these dorms and live in these off-campus housing where the chances of catching it are much, much greater than if you were staying at home, for example, and going to school online. And while a lot of these students are basically locked into their rooms, watching on a computer as they take their course, these players have to go out and have to practice in a gym and have to practice on a field and all the rest of it. Not to mention the ethical and moral question of why should football players who don't get paid for college get tested every single day while there are needy citizens in homeless shelters and nursing homes, or whatever, who can't get a test, which is unexplainable. So, but, you know, envy wins out, and they had, you know, football envy that some places were playing and they're not. So far, college football has seemingly survived most of it. And I suppose that the Big Ten, if they test everybody every day, will survive it too. But I say to you, Brad, I've written this, you know, just because you test everybody every day, so that means that if a guy gets it, you get to keep him away from your team. Well, great, except for the guy who got it. You're not helping him, you know. And what happens if he gets a severe case? What happens if he gets heart issues like some of these other players? It's still your fault that he got it because you brought him back onto campus as a place to catch. Just because you get him off your team quick enough that he doesn't infect somebody else doesn't mean that you've done the right thing.
No, it's like out here where we are not playing football until all students are in class and they're on campus. And all of a sudden it's like, whoa, wait a minute. No, come on, guys, come on back. we got to get you on the field, and we got to get you on the field before Halloween. Like, what happened to the sanity of all this?
And that's the other thing. They're starting at Halloween, like you say.
Yeah.
The Big 12 will be halfway done with their season by that point. How are you going to coordinate all of these teams? When are you going to play a national championship? Michigan and the Big Ten teams here are now going to play 8 weeks straight in a row. No bye weeks, no chance. If a team gets infected or whatever, there's no provisions for it. Then they're going to play a ninth week where they're going to have a playoff. And literally they'll be 8 days away from a college football playoff if any of them make it in there. Not to mention that they've blown right through final exams, which was usually the reason that you stopped playing football just after Thanksgiving, so that you could actually give the kids a chance to study. Oh, heaven forbid we do that now. So there are a lot of flaws in this system, and it's going to be a crazy college football year.
I appreciate your time. It's good catching up with you. Thanks, Mitch.
Good to talk to you, too. Thank you.
There's Mitch Albom there, and it's always good to have Mitch, best-selling author with the Detroit Free Press. And we're back with more after this timeout. All right, I want to talk about Bryson DeChambeau here for a bit, and then we'll have the Fantasy Focus with Sandy Charles and Michael Fabiano all around the fantasy football end of things. So Bryson DeChambeau has turned the world on its ear. Eric, I know that golf is something that is new for you, but I think anybody with the Masters coming up now in just less than 2 months, to look at what Bryson DeChambeau has been doing. You know, he bombed 365-yard drives over at Winged Foot. He is trying to, as you mentioned earlier, his diet involving protein shakes. He has said he wants to get up to 270 pounds. His clubhead speed was in the mid-170s, approaching 200. Right. And so he wants to get to 270. He plans to experiment this week with a 48-inch driver shaft, 2.5 inches longer than his current one. So he's going to have more torque, right? And so Rory McIlroy was quoted in this story. It's in today's San Diego Union-Tribune. He just said, when I was with him at the Charles Schwab Challenge, my caddy and I looked at each other and we're like, holy bleep, that was unbelievable. And he's trying to gain more yardage before Augusta. That's the part. The announcers on this, Paul Azinger called it the future of golf and wondered, is Bryson's philosophy going to drip down to others who play his sport? What are guys in high school going to do? Are they going to swing for the fences? Azinger called it validation on steroids, later texting Golf Week that he meant no insinuation. Of the inconvenient choice of words, end quote. So the fact that when you watch a golf tournament and you're new to the sport, for me, when I watch Bryson, I am amazed by his power. It's not like watching Tiger Woods. He doesn't have that effect on me yet of like, oh my gosh, I have to see what Bryson is doing. Does this do anything for you as a, you're coming into the sport now. You're who they need.
Let me clarify. I'm new to playing golf. I'm not new to watching golf. Is golf a top priority for me every weekend to watch? No, but most of the time I will catch the big events. And I think it's sort of, you know, it reminds me a little bit, Brad, of like the transformation we've seen over the years with offensive linemen. Like in the past, offensive linemen were small. And then they got, you know, we had the 300-pound offensive lineman, and now you have 6'9", 350-pound offensive linemen that are just ridiculous. Like, over the weekend, I was bored, and I watched the Tony Mandrich E60 that was on the DVR that I've had for, like, 7 or 8 years. Yes, he did steroids, but he ran a 4.65 40 at the NFL Combine, and he was 6'5", 330 pounds. In golf, the old golfers used to be portly guys, just normal-looking dudes. And then Tiger came around, and everything started to be streamlined. And now we see the Dustin Johnsons and the real, like, tall, athletic, thin, streamlined. And now we have Bryson, and maybe Bryson is taking that to a whole nother level because he wants to be a 270-pound golfer, but in a good way. Like, I mean, he's well put together. It's not a bad 270.
But you could be, to your point, though, it's like it's like basketball, where Dirk came along and Dirk really invented the 6'11 guy to shoot from downtown.
Great example.
Giannis has come in, and Giannis has taken the whole deal of this is how you play basketball as a big guy to a different level. Well, in golf, if it's, well, no, you really don't have to know how to use everything. You just have to grip it and rip it, as we used to say back in the day, and just hit it a mile like Bryson does. And there's people that are wondering whether or not this is good for the sport. Roger Maltby, who is 69, I think this is worth noting because of all the experience he's had, said during NBC's telecast on Sunday, quote, "Every part of me wants to not like this, that you just reduce the game to power. Historically, that's just not the way it's been done. I admit to being part of that group, but this is impressive, and he's convincing me that he's not wrong." So if he goes to Augusta and he just starts bombing away and running away, he won by 6 at the U.S. Open. He was hitting out of the rough. It was up to almost the calves of some of these guys.
Yeah, he's like a real-life Happy Gilmore. I mean, he just destroys the ball off the tee. He hits it as far as he wants to hit it. But yeah. And honestly, Brad, like, if he can hit it straight and he can reach, if he can bomb a driver on a par 5 and then, you know, chip and putt in for eagle.
But if you're a golf coach of a high school kid, and that's what this column really got to, the heart of the matter is it changing the face of golf for young people? We like to talk high school and college. We're just not about pro. So anytime I can take a story on a large level and bring it down to local, are we going to see kids that just want to get up and bomb it rather than understand, no, you need your 5-iron to do this and your 8-iron to do that? Well, that's not what Bryson does. Bryson mainly carries around like 3 or 4 clubs and that's it.
Golf is a different animal, though. I mean, you can have a big kid who lifts a lot of weights and that can push around defensive linemen, but it's a lot harder to hit that little white ball, not just far, but hit it straight, as you've seen with my game. The little, a little tiny oopsie, and that ball is going way right, or that ball is going way left, or that ball is going where you're not intending to put it. And I just don't know why this guy decided to make a change. He wanted to become a better player. He lifted a bunch of weights. As far as we know, he didn't do steroids. Maybe he did. I don't know. That's not for me to judge.
Put the protein shakes in him, seven shakes a day.
Of course, but yeah. If you can make yourself better, I don't know why all these people are hating, because, you know, obviously he's creating a buzz that he generated himself. And I think
his attitude is one of, when he plays, it is somewhat painstaking to me. There are times where he just has idiosyncrasies about him that, you know, it's fine to tee off and hit it a long ways. I'm 6'8". If I'm off by this much, to your point, right? Because there's so much of me that's trying to spin around. If I'm off by this much, it's going to go the wrong way. I mean, I understand what you're saying. I just think that for golf right now, the discussion about him is something that I look at and wonder, is it really going to be good for the game in this way? Will the PGA, will the Masters, will they try and change the course? They used to call it tiger-proofing, right? They used to say, we're going to tiger-proof the course. Well, how can you tiger-proof this course if at the U.S. Open they thought, well, we fixed wing foot. They had one hole there. The discussion here was, they had one hole where they moved it back 45 yards and they put a bunch of trees in the way. And all Bryson did, he hit over the trees. So you can't even Bryson-proof the course.
I got an idea. Just make the greens like cereal bowls and put the pin in the back right corner and with a really, really short drop off and sand all around it. So great, you can get to the green, but after you 5-putt, you know, maybe we can even things out a little bit.
All right, Sandy Charles is up next, Fantasy Football Focus with Michael Fabiano. It's always good to have Fabs on board from SiriusXM, the Hall of Famer, breaking down your fantasy football waiver wire picks and all that. That's next.
I'm Sandy Charles, and I'm now joined by Sports Illustrated's senior fantasy analyst, Michael Fabiano. Michael, lots of injuries to get to, but first, I want to know, how's your heart after that Cowboys game?
That was amazing. I had written them off about four times during the game. I had used very many four-letter words during that game as well. I was going back and forth on Twitter with Michael Irvin because we know each other from our time together at NFL Network and obviously both diehard Cowboys fans. It was great to see them come back and win the game. I just don't think that defense is a championship caliber defense, and I fear what's going to happen in Seattle this week. But at least for 1 week, it felt good to be a Cowboys fan.
Yeah, that was a great, great ending. Well, good. Glad to know that your heart, okay, handled the game. Let's get to waiver wire, week three waiver wires. Let's start with quarterback. Who are you eyeing?
A lot of players go down this week with injuries. We saw that. I have not seen – I can't remember a Sunday with so many injuries. But quarterback position had Jimmy Garoppolo go down. He's potentially week to week here. So Nick Mullins in the 2QB league. Jeff Driscoll with Drew Lock. He is a 2QB league option. Justin Herbert, if Tyrod Taylor is unable to go, 2QB league option. The bigger names, though, Ryan Tannehill, who was tremendous against Jacksonville, almost 27 fantasy points, had 19 in week one. And people just don't believe in him for some reason. He was great in the second half of last year. He's been playing at a high level for a while here. So he needs to be added across the board. Joe Burrow, 316, three touchdowns, almost 25 points against the Browns. He is a tremendous, tremendous rookie player, a guy that really shows me a lot in his first two games in the National Football League. So he needs to be rostered as a QB too. And then Gardner Minshew, the magic mustache, three more touchdowns, over 23 fantasy points, had 20 in week one, and he's got Miami on Thursday Night Football. That's a great matchup. So I know that Minshew had this whole campaign with, I don't know if it was Budweiser or somebody, to draft him in the first round and they'll get a case of beer. He's definitely not worth the first round pick, but he's playing really, really good, Sandy.
Yeah, it's that mustache magic, like you said. It's impressive. Well, there were a lot of injuries at running back. Saquon Barkley, definitely out. Who are you eyeing for running back for waiver wire?
Well, Mike Davis is going to be the big name off the wire with Christian McCaffrey out 4 to 6 weeks due to that high ankle sprain. So Davis will be number one across the board. Jerick McKinnon also well worth a look. Only had three carries last week, but had 77 yards and a touchdown. He has scored in two straight games. Raheem Mostert looks like he's week to week with his knee injury. So McKinnon is a very solid pickup. Also, Tevin Coleman's out. So Darrell Henderson, although I don't know that I believe in anyone running back in that backfield in Los Angeles because it's going to be a week-to-week situation, but Cam Akers has got the ribs injury, and Malcolm Brown is banged up with the finger. I think he'll play this week, but Henderson was very good last week against Philadelphia. Wayne Gallman and Deion Lewis, both with Saquon Barkley out for the season, will be worth a look. I'd rather have Gallman over Deion Lewis, but ultimately the Giants could add somebody like Devonta Freeman, and that would ruin both of their values, but unfortunately, you just can't replace Saquon Barkley. In Los Angeles, one of my preseason sleepers, Joshua Kelly, has looked very good. He's getting a lot of touches, 23 carries this past week, and he has basically filled into that Melvin Gordon role, so he needs to be owned. And then in deeper leagues, Miles Gaskin as well for the Miami Dolphins, who is now leading that backfield, although there's not a whole lot to like in Miami in that running back situation, but Gaskin's at least worth a look off the waiver wire.
You touched on Freeman. He doesn't have a team. Are you going to pick him up just in case?
Yeah, it's always worth it if you have a roster spot to put in a speculative ad for a player who might have some value. And for fantasy owners who have that roster spot that might be worthless at this point, mm-hmm. Freeman's well worth going after. And if he doesn't sign, you simply drop him. If he does sign, maybe you've got something there.
Now, what about wide receiver? Lots of injuries at wide receiver. Who are you eyeing?
Corey Davis, for me, two straight games where he's put up some pretty good numbers, almost 13 fantasy points against the Jaguars. A.J. Brown, not sure when he's coming back, so Davis is worth a look. Russell Gage in Atlanta, nine targets, six catches against my beloved Dallas Cowboys, has had two straight games where he's put up very good numbers. He needs to be owned. Keelan Cole in Jacksonville, six catches, 58 yards. Scored a touchdown against the Titans. He's had two good games. Looks like the number two wide receiver in Jacksonville. Adam Humphries also in Tennessee. While A.J. Brown is out, six targets, five catches, almost 16 points against the Jaguars. And he's got a good matchup this week against Minnesota. Paris Campbell goes down with an injury. So Zach Pascal and or Michael Pittman worth a look in deeper leagues. And then same goes with Chase Claypool in Pittsburgh.
And lastly, tight end.
Jonnu Smith talking a lot of Tennessee Titans, right? Five targets, four catches, had a couple of touchdowns against the Jaguars, and the Titans like to use the tight ends. It was Delanie Walker for years, and now it looks like it's Jonnu Smith. Mike Gesicki, who I didn't love, the matchup was bad last week, but Buffalo had some injuries in the defensive side of the football. Gesicki, 11 targets, 130 yards, 27 points against Buffalo. He is certainly rosterable. I mean, he was a guy that was drafted in all of my leagues, but in some home leagues out there, maybe he's floating around the waiver wire. Dalton Schultz, those Cowboys, 10 targets, 9 catches, had almost 22 points against Atlanta. I wouldn't play him this week because Seattle's been very tough on tight ends this year with the addition of Jamal Adams. But moving forward, Schultz looks like the guy for the Cowboys at that tight end position. And then in San Francisco, Jordan Reed, who was a sleeper of mine last week, I'm not sure if George Kittle's coming back this week. If he does, then Reed's value obviously is not as high. If Kittle is out again against the Giants, 8 targets, 7 catches, 24 points against the Jets. He's back on that same turf again. It's very weird to see in a day where so many guys got hurt that Jordan Reed, who's always hurt, ends up being a star. Mo Alie-Cox in Indianapolis is another player. And then a under-the-radar pickup, Drew Sample in Cincinnati with CJ Uzama injured.
As always, I'm joined by Sports Illustrated senior fantasy analyst Michael Fabiano. Michael, that was waiver wires. A little bit deeper with Saquon Barkley out with the Giants. Dissect that backfield. How's that going to work?
Again, I think Gallman is the guy to pick up. He was a healthy scratch last week. Deion Lewis is not a three-down back. He is a guy that's going to be utilized in passing situations as a satellite back, more along the lines of a third-down role, where Gallman will be the early-down back. But neither one of these guys combined is going to even be close to what Saquon was. And every week that you start them, there's going to be some risk involved because the Giants defense is very bad right now and they're hurting. I mean, Sterling Shepard is injured as well. This is an offense that's really in a lot of trouble. The matchup this week, I mean, it's bad on paper against the Niners, but they're all banged up as well. Their defense lost, Bosa, Richard Sherman's banged up, Solomon as well. It is a tough situation for that San Francisco defense at this point. But if I had to start Gallman or Lewis, it's probably Gallman, but I'm starting them and crossing my fingers, Sandy, because neither one of these guys is going to be very reliable.
Now let's go to the Broncos. Lots of injuries there, but with Cortland Sutton out, how does this increase Jerry Judy's fantasy value?
Judy's already seeing the targets and he certainly is closer to a wide receiver three, I would think, with Sutton out. But the big winner has been Noah Fant. I love Noah Fant in the preseason. Think he's going to break out. Already started to break out. 2 games, 2 touchdowns. Looks very good. And Jeff Driscoll, he's a comparable quarterback. He's not bad. He is. He's had some big stat lines in the past. I remember last year he had a couple for the Detroit Lions. He's a player who can get it done. And obviously he's a downgrade from Drew Lock, but he is a player that if you're in a 2QB league, like I said, I mean, you could do worse picking him up off the waiver wire. But to me, Judy obviously sees an increase in value. Fant sees an increase in value, although he's already been pretty darn good. And then KJ Hamler, maybe, but I don't think I'd trust him outside of deeper leagues. And in that case, he'd be on the bench.
Awesome. Thank you, Michael. Lots to break down, lots of injuries, lots of waiver wire. Week 3 pickups. As always, this is Michael Fabiano with Sports Illustrated. He's the senior fantasy analyst. I'm Sandy Charles.